This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The former Feed Materials Production Center in Fernald, Ohio, just 20 miles from Cincinnati, processed uranium as part of our country's nuclear weapons program from 1951 until 1989. When production at the site ceased, cleanup and environmental remediation began. And today, that once contaminated site is home to the Fernald Preserve, with more than 1,000 acres of wetlands and wildlife habitat covered in miles and miles of trails for birders, hikers, and photographers. And joining us to explore the history of the Fernald site are Jane Powell, former site manager with the Department of Energy, Department of Energy support contractor and ecological manager John Homer, Thomas Schneider, Division of Air Pollution Control Supervisor and Fernald Paddy's Run Conservation Project Manager, and also Lisa Crawford, a nearby resident who was a leader in the effort to close and clean up the plant. Now, we won't be able to take your calls during this segment, but we can take emails, talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Tom, let's go back in Fernald's history so we can have an idea of how far it's come today. Describe what Fernald was like during its Cold War days as a uranium processing plant.
Sure. I started working on Fernald in about 1990, right out of grad school. And so the site had been shut down for 2 years when I first arrived on site. But there were still lots of workers there. But the facility was it was old, and there were lots and lots of drums of waste everywhere. And they had some ponds of or pits where they slurried waste out back. And so there, it was quite the shock visually. And for right out of school, it was clearly a big task ahead to get to where we are today.
It was a pretty stark place, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
You saw it. I probably first saw it the first time in the mid 80s.
Uh huh.
I lived up that way and was a reporter up that way, and it was just it just was a bleak image.
It's very industrial. You know, all the buildings were made of transite, which is a concrete asbestos mix, so that they would be fireproof. And so there was not much visually appealing about their status, and so it really looked very industrial and old when you looked at it at that point.
Lisa, you were instrumental in getting Fernald closed and cleaned up, but what was it like having this plant that was processing radioactive material sitting in the midst of your community?
It was very, very scary. It became a nuclear nightmare. You know, I think the neighbors just became very, very concerned. We were scared for our kids' health. You know, we basically just wanted to kick their door down and make them do the right thing, because they had not done the right thing for so many years and so long. There was no oversight. Nobody was really paying attention. And I think that's in the beginning, in the early years. We got involved in 84. You know, it was just really to kind of educate ourselves, make ourselves aware of what had happened at this facility, and then to try to move forward to get rid of the old and to begin with the new.
Lisa, was the whole community pretty much in agreement that something had to change at Fernald?
In the early years, I think people were a little confused, but I think as we did our education piece, when we formed FRESH, Fernald Residents for Environmental Safety and Health, and we began to really begin to educate ourselves and realize what had happened there and what needed to happen there, I think people came on board through the years. It wasn't something that happened, you know, overnight, of course.
Now, when you started this campaign to close and clean up the site, did the community view this as something that could actually be turned into an asset for the area if it was done right?
I think in the early years, we hadn't gotten that far. I think people were trying to wrap their minds around what had happened here, the water contamination. I lived in a house across the street that had a contaminated well. I think we were so kind of linear focused on, you know, the contamination and the health issues and all of that. I think it took us, you know, we worked on Fernald for 22 years, and it took us until the mid to late 90s to really begin to think about what's our next step. Where do we go from here?
Jane, was cleaning up Fernald more complicated because of how close it was to the community and the fact that it sat on a major water source for the region, the Great Miami Aquifer?
Yes, it was more complicated, and it was, along with Rocky Flats and Mound, one of the first major, literally huge, hundreds of millions, even into the billions of dollars cleanup. And as Lisa said, there was a lot of education to be done. There was a lot of things that needed to be understood about what the cleanup was. as especially the waste disposal, how clean should it be, and then, of course, what its end use would be. So having sitting over a Class 1 aquifer did certainly complicate the cleanup.
So this was, I guess, is it fair to describe this, Jane, as a massive undertaking, all this needed remediation work?
Mark, I'd like to say it's probably any one of the five major projects at Fernald anywhere else would be a major project. So, yes, it was a massive undertaking that needed the collaboration of the community, chief among them Lisa and Fresh, the regulators represented by Tom and Graham Miller. The politicians had to be on board, especially for the funding, and then solving the technical challenge with the contractor and the Department of Energy.
Yeah, Mark, I often describe Fernald as like as one of the most complex and comprehensive cleanups, definitely the biggest in Ohio and in the scale of the country to be completed to date. It is certainly up there with the most complex done to date.
Tom, you were coming at this from the state regulatory side. What role did Ohio play in all this?
Well, Ohio was involved very early on with actually sampling Lisa Crawford's well that she talked about that was contaminated. And from that point in the process, we're heavily involved in the cleanup, both from a litigation standpoint to get DOE to sort of change their ways to be regulated by the state. Early on, they argued that they weren't subject to regulation by state regulations, and so there was a lot of litigation. And then throughout the process slowly improved over time, and we saw a point where everybody was working collaboratively to make sure that we got what we all referred to as the shared vision. And what you talked about is that how do you see Fernald as something other than a giant industrial complex that's got radioactive contamination in it? And it was a long process, but everybody worked together towards that end as we went along.
And Lisa, did I understand you correctly? You said it was a 22-year effort. Is that what I heard you say?
We started in the fall of 84, and we actually finished, the biggest bulk of the cleanup. We're still doing aquifer cleanup and a few other things now, but the bulk of it ended in 2006. So it was a 22-year-long battle. And I think it's important that people understand everybody had to have a seat at the table. If everybody didn't have a seat at the table, then I don't think we would have made the progress that we made as we moved along through those 22 years. And as Jane mentioned, we had to have the community, we had to have the regulators, we had to have our local elected officials. And, if you don't put everybody at a seat at the table, at the end, you don't have the buy-in.
And I'd add to that, Lisa, that there has to be a significant education of all those members so that they are basically coming at it from the same set of information to make those decisions, because there was a lot of effort put into educating all those folks along the way about the situation at Fernald and the potential options for cleaning it up so that we could reach consensus.
Jane, how many old nuclear sites like this exist, and how many have been cleaned up as much as Fernald has been?
Well, there are numerous sites ranging from former mom-and-pop facilities from the 1950s that were part of the nuclear weapons complex up to sites like Weldon Spring, Rocky Flats, Mound, and Fernald. And of those, the major cleanups, there are four major ones. And by that, I mean in the hundreds of millions, even to the $4.4 billion cleanup that is Fernald.
Now, isn't there another former site with a similar story to Fernald? It's been cleaned up and it's been turned into a preserve. I think it's near St. Louis, isn't it, Jane?
Yes, sir. That's the Weldon Spring site. It, like Fernald, has a visitors or interpretive center, and a part of the Hamburg Trail runs across it. And like Fernald, it has an extensive community outreach program.
Jane, can you talk specifically about what was done in the remediation? I mean, did they literally go in and bulldoze the place and then start moving material off the site? Is that kind of an overly simplistic way of describing what happened?
Yes, but it's accurate. It depended on what needed to be cleaned up, what was done. The waste pits that Tom referred to earlier, where we had slurried waste product in, required one kind of cleanup. You had to characterize so you knew what you were handling, so you could protect the workers and handle the materials in the correct way. So the cleanup ranged from all the way from cleaning up wet, sludgy waste in the ground to decontaminating to some complex, doing a pre-clean of those buildings Tom mentioned earlier, 10 major complexes. And it wasn't only as uranium we were concerned about for the protection of workers and the community, it was the asbestos. And then finally, probably one of the toughest challenges across the nuclear weapons complex was cleaning up the K-65 silos. Sludgy waste stored there because at one time it had value because of the high radium content. And so you had a multiplicity of issues to deal with, from lots of radon, how do you get it out of the tanks, how do you stabilize it, and then finally, ultimately, for all of the cleanup waste materials, where do you dispose of it? So we use commercial facilities meeting the regulations and laws, and the on-site disposal cell, and some amount of it on federal property to the west. One of the remarkable things, sub-stories about Trinald, is how the community came together to decide the cleanup level, which dictated how much waste there was, and coming to the realization, well, if I wouldn't want this material in my backyard, I shouldn't ship it across the country to someone else's backyard. So the majority of the waste stayed on site, but it's the least radioactive, the least harmful, and the very worst of the materials were stabilized and shipped to where there isn't any surrounding communities near it.
Well, Mark, I think we should note here, too, we called it the balanced approach many years ago. I had toured all the nuclear weapons complexes across the country by that point, and you make friends wherever you go. And the whole point here was not to be a NIMBY, not to say, I don't want any of this stuff in my backyard, so we're going to ship it to somebody else's backyard. And the challenge, I think, for the Fernald community was to be able to sit at the table and make those decisions about how much are we willing to keep, how clean is clean, and where are we consciously going to send the waste we have to send off-site to. And we reached out to the different places we sent waste to have a conversation with the folks that lived around there that, are you okay with this? You know, I think that's really an important piece of the whole Fernald cleanup.
If you have questions or comments, we can't take phone calls right now, but you can email your questions and comments to talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Tom, this sounds like this was no easy task at all to do this.
No, it was a pretty Herculean task to achieve the cleanup at Fernald, and it took a lot of vision to get from, you know, that very industrialized, contaminated complex to the preserve we see today that's really an asset to the community. Where, you know, you can view and enjoy the wildlife from the area.
Jane, ultimately, how much did it cost to clean the site up?
Approximately $4.4 billion, billion with a B.
And a couple of, it sounds like a couple of decades of time as well. Now, some of the material still remains on the site, correct? It's buried in a huge mound that's far away from the trails and the public areas, right?
That's right, yeah.
It's an engineered land disposal facility that is monitored per our agreements with the community and the regulators, that is performing well within specifications, and gradually the waste is drying up and the wastewater. And as that material is treated to meet the discharge standards. So, yes, there is waste still on site, but there aren't any trails near it and aren't any public access trails near it.
Lisa, do you feel like that's kind of a necessary thing, that's a reminder of Fernald's past?
I do. I think it's, you know, when we were making these tough, hard decisions, I think our thought process went to, this is sort of our legacy. You know, this is what we're going to have to keep here because we fought so hard to try to get this site cleaned up to the best of our ability. And I just wasn't willing to ship it to somebody else's backyard. I think it keeps us focused to say, you know, nothing can ever be built here. You know, you can't have a picnic here. You can't play baseball here. It's sort of the legacy of Fernald.
John, can you talk about where the idea came from to turn this into a nature preserve?
Well, as Lisa and Tom and Jane were talking about, this balanced approach kind of came to be in the 90s when the stakeholders and the regulators and DOE got together and were talking about, you know, what can happen with this site, how can this be a benefit or an asset to the community, and to to their credit, I think they decided instead of just fencing it off, or instead of cleaning it to make it another industrial park, they can open it to the public to allow for wildlife viewing, and that way settle both the cleanup goals that were met and also provide benefit to the public and to the wildlife. And that helps to settle some of the litigation that Tom was talking about as well, as far as the natural resource damage settlement.
Tom, did people raise their eyebrows when that suggestion came up? Let's turn this into a nature preserve.
Along the way, there were many doubters, I'll say, that would look at either the industrial complex that was there, or even when we were mid cleanup, there were a whole lot of very deep dirt holes that we dug to chase the uranium and the structures to get it all cleaned up, and it took some serious vision to be able to see those holes as something other than really deep dirt holes that they could become the ponds, the wetlands, and the prairies that they are today out there. So there were quite a few doubters along the way, and some of us thought we might have been crazy going at it. But in the end, we look at it now and know that it was a great success.
And I'd point out that even the disposal cell that Jane was talking about is covered in prairie grasses, so it's almost
integrated into the entire restoration.
Right.
That's amazing. Have there been, was this kind of a new way of looking at remediation? Had there been attempts at doing this kind of thing in the past, or was Fernald one of the first?
Go ahead, Jane. I'm sorry.
Sorry, John. Fernald was one of the first. Weldon Spring is a much smaller site and had gone out of operation many years before. Fernald, of all the sites in the department's legacy management program, is the most accessible to the public, with 7.1 miles of trails and a wildlife observation. So, yes, at the time and even today, it is one of, in my opinion, the most beautiful and the most publicly accessible and useful to the community sites in the department's purview.
I think it's important to understand when we got really into this, and you know, we began to see our vision sort of take shape, that we, part of the community, what we wanted to do was really preserve the history of what happened at Fernald. And if you visit the visitor center, you know, there's displays and there's interactive things that you can walk through and see over there that really preserves our history. And it wasn't, I don't think it was the community's goal in the beginning to just shut it down. I think our concern was if we really shut it down that they would put a padlock on the gate and walk away from it. So you had to walk kind of a balance to get us to where we are today. But, you know, you can walk through the visitor center, and, I mean, it lays the entire history out for you. And I think that's really important that we preserve that.
John, what's the state of the ecosystem at Fernald today?
Well, it's really coming along. We basically have got over 900 acres of the 1,050-acre site has been ecologically restored to the way I describe it, in kind of three macro levels: either wetlands, created wetlands, prairie established prairies, or forest restoration. And we do long-term monitoring of those ecosystems as a part of our agreement with the stakeholders and the regulators, and they're becoming established. So one of the things we're really excited about is finding mole salamanders in some of our created wetlands. It's amphibian communities are very sensitive in population because they spend part of their time in water and part of their time in terrestrial habitat. And so we use those as one of our kind of key indicator species. In a lot of our northern created wetlands, we've been finding mole salamander species for several years now. So we're real excited about that.
I think these keystone species are one really good example of, you know, how we know that the restoration success at Fernald is there. We have bobcats that have been at Fernald since in the past few years, which are really new to this part of Ohio showing up. And we've had bald eagles and a number of other different creatures that show up that really show that it's a big, you build it and they will come.
Yeah.
That was a question. You build it and they will come. Was this a case of the plants and the animals being brought in or to the site, or did nature just find its own way back in pretty much?
Well, we actively revegetated the site with a goal of native vegetation native to Southwest Ohio. And after those communities were put in place, through regrading, soil rebuilding, vegetation establishment through seeding and planting. Then we started to see the wildlife come back. We mentioned the salamanders, we mentioned the bobcats, but we also have extensive grassland communities that bring in breeding grassland birds. And then the wetlands and open water areas that are interspersed around those prairie communities also bring in migratory waterfowl. So the area has really become kind of a destination for birders.
A big birder haven.
Yeah.
Hikers, I would assume, as well.
Well, hikers, too.
A lot of hiking going on.
Yeah, there's over 7 miles of trails on site, and you get the chance to see a variety of the restored habitats from the prairies and the wetlands and the forest communities, depending on which trail you take.
John, wasn't there a rare animal of some type that was sighted at Fernald, I think, back in 2011?
Yeah, this was the birding community, which was really a fascinating discovery of mine that it was such a popular popular occurrence. We had a gargany, which is a rare duck.
Okay.
Yes, a gargany, and wound up, it was there for about 6 weeks, and it was very easy to see because we had several observation decks overlooking some of our open water areas. And there were people from all over the country showing up to see this bird. They would literally fly in that day, see the bird, and leave so they can check it off of their list.
So I take it, after hearing all this, you can just come out and visit. If you want to come out and visit on the weekend, you can just drive out and it's open to the public.
Yeah, the site's open. 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to dusk. You can hike the trails anytime. The visitor center is open 9 to 5, Wednesday through Saturday. And in addition to that, our public affairs staff does events quite often, outreach events and that talks about nature programs, history of the site. Just last night, they had a viewing of the partial solar eclipse. There's a fall foliage hike.
There's a night hike tonight, right?
There's a night hike tonight. So you can check the Fernald website and to get a list of events, and you can get on our mailing list.
Lisa, what's your reaction to the transformation of Fernald? I guess it's kind of a holy cow kind of feeling.
It is. I go to the site quite often, and when you get halfway back the entrance road, I always have to stop and sit in my car because I can still close my eyes and see the old industrial complex. And you just go, this, you know, it's amazing. There's not another word I can even think of. It was an amazing transformation, and you just, you know, you think, my God, all the years of hard work, and we ended up with this beautiful, wonderful place. Yeah, I recommend highly that people go. I'm not a hiker. I heard your little bit of your interview before this one. I'm not a huge hiker, but, you know, there's so many other things to do, and people should really check it out. It's a great community asset, and I think that was our goal, was to make this into something. It just wouldn't just sit there. It would be used for the good of the community.
Thank you, Lisa. We have run out of time, and thanks to everybody for joining me this afternoon.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark.
Jane Powell, former site manager with the Department of Energy, Department of Energy Support Contractor and Ecological Manager John Homer, Thomas Schneider, Division of Air Pollution Control Supervisor at Fernald Paddy's Run Conservation Project Manager, and Lisa Crawford, a nearby resident who was a leader in the effort to close and clean up the Fernald plant.